more money on that, but the story needs to be told before we all die, you know?
Yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. You're right. Okay, we're starting here now with tape two, and I'm speaking with Nicholas Wolfert. And we were actually, Nick remembered something from a earlier part of the story.
Memory line.
So this is a memory of the wagon train going from the Ukraine to Poland.
Going west, yeah, we stopped at Poland.
Yeah. Yeah, so why don't you say what the conditions were like and what you remember that?
Well, the winter setting, it was very, very cold. We were in a wagon, no kind of heat, just blankets, fur, and things we picked up that the people on the way donated. See, everybody had sympathy for us. They donated us blankets and little food they had left and everything. And we had many, many rivers to cross. And every time we crossed the river, the ice would break. There were so many wagons on it. We were trying to get away from the Russian armies, which was approaching us fast, you know.
Right.
And many, many Germans lost their life.
How many wagons were on the train, roughly?
As far as you could see, nobody knows.
Yeah.
It was thousands of us on the Landgram from Katharina the Great. There was Germans in many parts of the country. Many, some was involved in all fields, in industry. See, we was just a small part involved in farming.
I see.
Teaching them how to farm and business techniques, but there was many, many more.
I see. Now, what would people do as your wagon train passed different communities? People would just come out?
Just come and cry and help us, yeah.
Now, were they were German people?
There was German people or German sympathizers.
Uh-huh. Now, I wanted to ask you, actually, about gypsies. What encounters did you have with gypsies?
Well, We run into them different places. The reason you could tell they was gypsies, they had the early version of trailer homes with a chimney on top. They had wood stove on the inside. That's how you could tell, you know.
Uh-huh.
And they was really prepared for travel. We was fleeing, you know.
Yeah.
When you could see smoke coming out of the chimneys on top of the wagons.
Uh-huh. Now, were you on actual roads? Or were you sort of making your way?
Making our way, man, whatever. There'd be people going in front. Similar to the Oregon Trail or whatever.
Yeah, right.
In this country, they'd be scouting, see if it's safe and all that. See, they didn't have no way knowing that the ice going to break, see?
Wow.
We had hills to cross, and
so a lot of people lost their life on the wagon train.
Never accounted for. You know.
Tell about how frozen you and your sister were.
Well, this was after we came to Poland. After we spent some time in there. That's after my sister Anna was born. The word was out again. The Russians approaching Poland. They had all the Ukraine and everything, and so drove the Germans out, see? They was coming fast, and there could be revenge against the women and all that, so we started forming the wagon train again and fleeing when the winter set in again. And my sister and myself, our legs got frozen severely, and we was in the back of the wagon. Some of the protection came loose, and we got hit by the sub-zero temperature. And we stopped at the village. First, the German doctors that was nearby looked at it, and they couldn't do nothing. They said, that might have to be cut off, you know. Then a gypsy woman, I don't know who she came from or who, she lived in a cave. She cooked all kind of root and stuff she dug up and everything. We kept rubbing and rubbing and rubbing. We had to go. We done got behind. Everybody done then passed us, and we're still sitting there. And the legs finally came to life.
Wow.
I still limp today. That's why I got rejected from the United States Army, which I wanted to join bad after I got up in age, you know.
Uh-huh.
I still limp today.
So so you were in her cave? Did you, your mother and father, like, stayed with you?
Father wasn't with us at the time. It's just mother.
Your mother. So your mother and the other children, you were in this gypsy's cave?
In a cave, yeah.
And she was rubbing with roots and warm...
With roots and everything, and she gave Mama some of the solution, because we had to go. The Russian was coming, you know. And Mama kept on rubbing.
Oh. Mm. Uh-huh.
We had a strange guy that drove away again. We didn't know who he was, you know. We was in the back of it.
Oh.
Mama was back to rubbing both our legs, you know.
Wow. Okay, well, let's see. Where did we leave off? you were in the camp, and then your father came from you, and you were leaving. And you went down the whole line of children, saying goodbye and wishing you well. And then you left from Duderstadt.
Yeah, we went back to Duderstadt.
Right.
Back up and everything. And the, how you say it in English, in the Lutheran church, when you come of age, you got a...
Confirmation?
Yes. They told mine early.
Oh, because you were leaving.
Because I was leaving, yeah. Real early. They made special church services just for me.
Well, now, what was it like? What was the confirmation ceremony?
Well, it was sad. Everybody, you know, they got used to us in Duderstadt. We was four children, see, we all in school and everything. Olga, meanwhile, was born in Duderstadt. Oh, you met her, I don't think.
Not yet.
Uh-huh. You will. Uh-huh. I think she's here now. Uh-huh. And we just made a name for ourselves, you know.
Yeah.
We bounced back. Every time we got mistreated, called Russians and Polacks. And
yeah.
Because we lived in Poland, too, you know.
Right, right.
The German people can be so cruel. I mean,
uh-huh. Well, so in other words, your life wasn't too bad.
No, life was good.
Life was good. It was the best you had.
Best we ever.
That you remember.
No guns, no nothing. Mm. Silent, quiet. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
We never had that. We learned about Christ and all that, you know.
So. Was there some misgiving about giving up the best life you ever knew?
To come to this country? Yes, ma'am, a lot of misgiving. Yeah. We didn't know what the future held. But we promised ourselves we were going to work hard and be good to everybody and make a life for ourselves, which we did.
Uh-huh.
Mama and Papa got many, many children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. Yeah. You met some.
Yes, yeah.
You ought to meet Mazix. Life was good.
Yeah.
We're glad we came. Well, after we left Ellis Island.
Well, first tell me when you got to Ellis Island. You left Duderstadt and you took a train?
We boarded a ship in Bremerhaven.
Right. And
in Germany.
Do you remember the leg of the trip between Duderstadt
yes,
and...
Yes, ma'am. It took 2 weeks to cross the ocean in a German liner, Gripsholm.
Had you ever seen the ocean before?
Yes, ma'am. I remember they sent me to recuperate the German government on them islands.
Right.
We went right by the island. There's so many islands. So this one I was on was Langeoog, because we was walking skeleton, you see, and they was trying to fatten us up a little bit. And we got on that ship late in the afternoon. The German band was playing, wishing us goodbye. Name of the song was Muss ich denn zum Städtlein hinaus. You ever heard that?
Yeah.
Elvis Presley made a recording of that when he was a GI in Germany.
Really?
Uh-huh. It's what it song says, do I have to leave my homeland, you know, or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But anyway, we got on board. And not long, we start sailing.
Now, was it all displaced persons?
All of us.
On the ship?
There was like 2,000 of them going to Canada.
Oh.
And 2,000 or maybe there was over 4,000 of us going to United States. We left, we sailed, we could see England in the distance, because Germany is fading away, you know. And we sailed around Scotland, up in the North Atlantic.
Yeah.
Supper time. They had us our own table for six, with our name tag on it, Wolford family, on food like we never had before. We thought, just think, we're going to have 2 weeks of this.
Yeah.
Or eat all you want to, you know. It's, to you guys probably, it's unbelievable what it is to eat all you want to. And
yeah.
You never had nothing.
Right.
And, well, we was in for a big surprise. Next morning, our head. You know, before we went to bed, we seen all them, what you call on ship, they call them stoods, I guess, that
Stuart,
they
huh?
everything. They was hanging little sacks everywhere.
Really?
Little, little sacks.
Uh-huh.
And we wondered what that's all about. But we found that next morning. Wow.
Oh, uh-huh.
We stayed sick for 3 days, didn't want nothing. They sent a doctor to each cabin. He bought a basket of food. Grapes and apples and peaches. We never had peaches or grapes before, see. And you're supposed to eat all that and it make you well. Yeah, after 3 days, my daddy was the only one didn't get seasick. After 3 days, we got well and we enjoyed them. Except somewhere about halfway up in the North Atlantic, we didn't know that. But the Titanic took the same path and we went over it. At that time, nobody knew would have sunk in 19.
You went over the Titanic, yes.
We went the same route. We had a lot of drills on the ship. In other words, everybody come on board, everybody knew what lifeboat and everything. Well, one night it came real. Everything went off. Everybody was ordered in a life gear, go to the boats. Iceberg. We could see it. It was a moon shining that particular night. We could see it in the distance. It's just like a piece of, like a diamond. The moon reflecting on it, and it was beautiful. But ship stopped right there. And a thing went by us.
Oh.
Didn't touch us, nothing.
No.
Like that. But they say the bottom of it is humongous, you know.
Oh.
The top is just very little, you know.
That's where the tip of the iceberg comes, that the idea comes from. Yeah.
So it went by us and we had a good voyage rest there. Now, one more thing. Our ship was heading to Nova Scotia. We was fixing to go to Halifax.
Uh-huh.
That's where the Canadian immigrants going to come off.
Mm-hmm.
We lost the propeller. You know, it had three propellers in the back. We lost the main one.
Oh.
Everybody was so scared and everything. On the Canadian Air Force bought us one, put it on. It's just...
You lost it before you hit Halifax.
Uh-huh.
And then...
A couple, 200-300 miles out in the ocean.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So I guess everybody was worried that the ship... Yeah.
Well, when the iceberg was, Mama was with us up there, everybody cried and screamed and everything, see. Because to me it was exciting. I couldn't believe it, what I'm seeing, you know.
Yeah.
And we pulled into Halifax and all those immigrants got off. The Canadian mounted...
Mounted police?
Royal police.
Uh-huh.
Band playing there.
Oh.
German music.
Oh.
It was very impressive.
Uh-huh.
So after that we start going to New York.
And describe what it was like coming into the New York Harbor.
We came into the harbor. We could see the stature, the PR system. That ship was pretty good equipped, you know. They could tell us to look to the right. And the Statue of Liberty was about like this and it got bigger.
Yeah.
And when it was about nightfall, it was pretty close, like a half a mile of it. And the captain said that it's going to be a tremendously tall fee to go into the harbor and park overnight. That's what I'm telling you. We got pulled into the harbor. The concrete, what you call it, we was parked against it.
Wow, like the pilings? Right, yeah. So that's what's, you mentioned you anchored first overnight.
Anchored first, yes, ma'am. Overnight, and we could, we stood there most of the night looking at the Statue of Liberty. I mean, I couldn't believe it. We was finally. You know.
Did you know as a boy, young boy? I mean, as a boy, did you know what it stood for and everything?
Yes, ma'am. They gave us literature on it. We knew exactly by heart what that.
Oh, what it says in the poem?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And all that. Yeah. We knew everything.
Uh-huh.
We had to know everything. We had to study hard. You're not going to make American citizen. It, I knew about the Constitution and everything, the Bill of Rights and all that. Some of you Americans knew.
Right.
But we had to know everything, or you're not going to make American, see?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So you mean you had to know that before you came?
No,
later, when you were going to be a citizen.
Yeah, citizen, but yeah. We studied
right,
ahead of time.
Right.
You know?
So describe what it was like aboard the Gripsholm when you were anchored out there by the statue.
We just couldn't believe it. Mama hooked us and cried. And
yeah, well. And
finally free, you know.
Yeah. So you anchored overnight, and the next morning...
Yes. Next morning, the ship was decorated on the night by the crew, the banners and thing. But next morning, we was met by... you've seen them in New York Harbor, them boats that spewed the water.
The fireboats.
Fireboats, and we was let in the harbor. We parked right opposite, alongside Ellis Island. Matter of fact, the ship was so high, we could see, we were looking down on the roof when you stand mm-hmm. way up there. Mm-hmm. You know?
And they must have had a very long gangplank.
They had, they set up that. The crew from the ship plus the crew from Ellis Island, they had the park people or whatever they was called. They set it up.
Uh-huh. And they up. Told you it was because it was too expensive to what? Pull into New York?
That was, ma'am, the done a night. To go to all this, it'd be too expensive. You have to pay a hard toll fee to be parked all night. That's what they told us.
Oh, I see. So they didn't park.
I don't know if it's true or not. You probably know more about it than I do. But it's very expensive to park all night.
I see.
After they got us unloaded, the ship left.
Left. Uh-huh. So what was your impression of Ellis Island?
It was a big building, big windows. We all formed a line and went through the process. They asked us a lot of questions. They had interpretation there. We couldn't speak no English. I could say two words.
Which ones?
Coca-Cola and girls. In English, that's all I knew.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And they asked us a lot of questions and all that, you know. And something about declaring, if I wanted to declare.
Oh, declare.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly, but I remember. Well, when I went back to Germany, when you enter the Germany, they want you to declare. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
Something, yeah. But we went in and they fed us in there. They were so nice. They had nurses in there with the white thing, with the Red Cross in it. And,
did they... give you a physical exam as well as ask you
no,
questions?
Because
you had that.
We already had that. We had all the shots and everything. They just looked at the papers.
Uh-huh.
They looked at you, make sure that you act and look normal.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want no mentally retarded coming down something, but you can't blame them, you know.
Yeah.
They wanted to make sure that you do this country some good, you know.
So did they take any of the family out of the line
no,
for further...
We passed them flying colors.
Uh-huh.
We went right through.
Yeah.
Out to the back where they fed us and everything, and the taxi cab come. And...
Can you say anything about the examinations you had before you left Germany?
Well, we had to have all kind of shots. They gave us a mental test.
Oh.
Uh-huh.
Putting blocks together,
yeah,
or certain
blocks
uh-huh.
together, and they say tricky
questions,
and, uh-huh. yeah, and all that. I mean, you can't blame them. They wanted this country was young then, and they wanted people that's doing some good. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
We took many tests and everything.
Did you have to stay overnight at Ellis Island?
No, ma'am.
No.
It was all in just like a dream, in and out. Next thing you know, we was in a big hall eating and waiting on a taxi cab. Taxi cab to us at the Union Station.
Grand Central Station. How did you manage without the language? Did you have a tag on you?
We had a tag on. Not up here, ma'am, before. Just like your forefathers, many, many years ago.
Oh,
Bundle on the shoulder and tag, we wore a tag which says Germany, a name.
And it probably said Tennessee, where you were going.
Tennessee.
Yeah.
We went to Marlin, Tennessee. That's where the train stopped. We got finally on a train. They fed us again on a train. We got as far as Cincinnati, Ohio. We knew we had to switch trains up there, one that goes south. We asked people which one, and we said, "Oh, that's that train. It's facing south, you know." But it wasn't true. We was hitting back.
Oh no! Mm-hmm. So you were on the wrong train.
Wrong train.
And how'd you find out?
I think it was Philadelphia, or whatever is the next big city up there.
Oh.
Conduct, big black guy, was real nice. Asked us where we going. I said, "Well, we're going to Tennessee." He said, "Well, Tennessee is in a different direction." He could talk part German. He was in the army and done the war in Germany. And he made sure we got on the right train. And we got.
Yeah. So you saw your first black person in Grand Central Station?
No, just on the streets of New York.
On the streets. Mm-hmm. So was there anything else about New York that struck you?
Yes, the Empire State Building, we went right on to. We read a lot about it and seen pictures of it. It's just an exciting city, everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how was the train trip?
Train trip was fine. After we got straightened out and everything, we came to West Virginia.
Oh.
On the way to Tennessee. I don't know how come we went that way. It seemed like it's out of the way.
Well,
but we did.
Uh-huh.
On eastern Kentucky. We seen homes with no doors, people living in it with no screens. You know, in Germany, though we was bombed, but everything was rebuilt. Nice and neat and clean, two-story homes. There are cars with hood open. And Mama just cried, wondering what we going to, you know?
Yeah.
We all wanted to go back.
Yeah?
So that's kind of life this going to be.
Yeah.
But after we got farther down, things looked better.
Uh-huh.
Look nice.
Now, your sponsor didn't have to go to Ellis Island to meet you.
No, ma'am. They met us in we stopped in Tennessee, which is Marlin, Tennessee. It's just up here, north of Jackson.
Oh, uh-huh.
They come and picked us up in cars.
Do you remember when the train arrived and being at the station?
Oh, yeah.
And what, describe that.
Well, it's just, we couldn't believe it. We're finally there, you know. And the people was all so nice. They'd read our tags, you know what I mean? And just want to do things for us. Because we stayed there just a short time. It's just exciting, man. It's just indescribable. Something we've been waiting for years, you know?
Yeah. And let's see. Did your aunt and uncle meet you?
Yes, there was both there. Edward and Olga, yeah. That's my daddy's sister.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they were both there.
Yeah, and the sponsor too?
The sponsor, one of his part of his family was. He was in Nashville, I think, something about a legislator or something. See, that was his job.
He
was
representative
of several counties, you know. I don't know what you call them in your part of the country. See, you elect them.
He's a state representative?
State representative, yeah. He'd be responsible for several counties, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, your first impressions then when you got off in Tennessee?
We just couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
Standing on solid ground.
And where did you go?
Well, they loaded us all up and we went to Scottsdale. all my, we stayed the night with my aunt and uncle. That was my daddy's sister. A couple of days, and they got us a home ready at a sponsor.
In Scottsdale?
Well, it's Regan, it's part of Scottsdale.
Oh, okay.
They got us a home ready, on furnished. It had food in it and everything, refrigerator and everything. We're just happy as we could be.
Yeah. And so did the home work out to be good?
Yeah, everything worked out.
Now, you had to pay back the money,
yes,
right?
Yes, so what was spent on us, yes.
And do you know how much it was?
Well, Daddy probably could tell you exactly, but it seemed like it was around $600.
Yeah.
Because in those days, ma'am, it was a lot of money. You could get a new pickup truck for that, you know?
Yeah.
We had money. We spent what we had. That was what was we couldn't come up with, you know?
Uh-huh.
So we paid it pretty quickly.
So now you had to work for the Kellys?
My daddy did.
Your daddy did.
I went to school. All his children started school up Scottsdale High School. We was picked up with a bus every morning, brought back. But daddy started to work for $3 a day.
And that was paying back the hundreds of dollars that it cost.
$3 was left. See, that was paid for the house we lived in and everything, you know.
So he received $3 and
the
rest went. The
rest went to the everything, yeah.
I see. Yeah. And so you went to school, and how were you received?
Oh, we was received good in the church and school and everything, except, you know, a few was making fun, but we was doing pretty good.
Yeah, and how about the teachers?
Teachers was very, very good.
They gave you special help, did they, with the language or not?
They give help, so you help yourself, you know. You know what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way you give your help, but you got to help yourself. You know?
Yeah.
They was very professional. They all country teachers.
Yeah.
There's a lot of common sense, you know.
Was the school like a one-room school, more grades than one?
It was a multi-room school, ma'am, but it was heated by wood. You know, that big wood stove that had the radiators in each room that kind of got warm. It was very cold. You could see dogs under the floor, you know, cracking. It's just plain old country school. You know?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Windows didn't work.
Uh-huh.
When it got too cold, we had got a day off, you know.
Oh, uh-huh. And then you got time off for cotton picking,
yes,
right?
Yes, ma'am. Every year we got time off. Of course, we picked our cotton, we hold our cotton. You got to hold it, you know. But we was off from school, like summer break, you know. But then in the fall, but this time of year, exactly this time of year, we got off a couple of months or so to pick cotton. That was the only income the people had, see. Everybody had 3 acres.
Oh, I see. So everybody picked, yeah. Uh-huh.
Just about everybody.
Yeah. So,
we picked all ours plus everybody else's.
Uh-huh.
We just got hard out to pick. We picked and picked and picked.
And what was it like, picking cotton?
Well, it was fun. For me, it was.
Uh-huh.
I beat everybody.
did you? The more you picked, the more you made, right?
But see, our money, it's not like a lot of people's money went. It all went in one tub to pay up our debt. Then Daddy got into sharecropping. We bought our own tractor, and he sharecropped. He still worked for Kelly's, but he had a crop on his own, see?
I see. Now, when he sharecropped, what precisely does that mean?
That means, ma'am, that you share half with the owner.
And you do the work because it's his land?
All the work, you spent the seed, the fertilizer, you spent all that. But the money that you get for the finished good, you got to have it. But the way we work, it make no difference. We've done ours and everybody else's, you know.
Yeah.
We just helped everybody.
Yeah.
We put money in the pile. Daddy finally bought his own farm, and own equipment and everything. After we made citizen, there's no gap.
Uh-huh.
We got into ownership.
When you first arrived, was there a period of time where particularly your parents, but maybe you too, were wondering if you made a mistake?
No, ma'am, because we had a better life. Only mistake was, like I mentioned earlier, coming to those part of Kentucky, and all them would look pretty.
The shacks and
it
everything.
It was cold country, was, you know.
Yeah.
I think Loretta Lynn was born
right.
somewhere there, coal
right.
miner's daughter.
Daughter, right.
It was rough. Good people. I visit them years later.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
That's about the only time. Yeah, there was a few moments where Mama, it's because Olga was born. Lisa was born.
Mm-hmm.
My younger sister. And there was, you know, a few blame. When you miss your homeland and, you know,
mm-hmm.
understandable, but no, we never really regretted. We're happy.
Yeah.
Once we got into ownership and all the money went to us and
uh-huh.
we worked together as a family. I'm the first one to get married. I got married on my birthday, May the 28th.
Oh.
61.
Uh-huh.
And my wife born and raised in Lexington. She's a sharecropper's daughter too.
Oh, uh-huh. Uh-huh.
She knows what hard times is and all that.
Yeah. So what is your wife's maiden name, or her whole name?
Carol, Janice Carol Melton.
M-E?
M-E-L-T-O-N.
Melton. Oh, Melton. Uh-huh.
It's a common name. Right?
Uh-huh. And you have children?
Yeah, we have two, Amy and Patrick. Patrick is the oldest.
Uh-huh.
Amy lives close. They both live close by here.
Huh.
Amy's husband, Scott, is a State Farm agent. Most of my family's in insurance in Annan Glen.
Oh, uh-huh.
He's a State Farm agent.
Oh, uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And Patrick, my son, he works for a Swedish company.
Okay, well, how did you meet? Is it Janice?
Janice, we call her Carol.
Carol. How did you meet?
There was, well, when I got out of school, ma'am, there was nothing to do around here. Just sawmills, garment factories, and finally a brand shoe company went to come to town. They're from St. Louis, you know. They was the factories everywhere, because they gone now, all in Mexico. They came to town, and I started working out there. I
uh-huh.
had no problem getting a job. And my wife, future wife, she's still going to high school. Lexington Harp here, and she started working at part-time till she graduated. She started working full-time. My mama worked next to her.
Oh, uh-huh.
And I told my mama, I thought she was kind of pretty, you know. My mama mentioned it to her. And I didn't have the guts asking her for a date.
Yeah.
And finally later, I did.
Uh-huh.
We went together for about 10 months, I think, and then got married on my birthday.
Well, uh-huh. Okay, so then did you stay working at the shoe?
We stayed, that's where I met Glenn also. My whole family worked at the shoe company.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where Anna and Glenn met too. And now I stayed about 5 years and we just seen there wasn't no way of making, I made like 85 cents an hour. Wife made much less. Women wasn't paid like men. And we just packed up and went up north and worked for Caterpillar up in Joliet, Illinois.
Oh, uh-huh. And how long did you stay up there?
Oh, about, not long, man, about a year and a half, something like that.
Uh-huh.
We got so homesick. We come back home and
could you say anything about the difference living up there and living in the South?
People weren't very friendly.
They weren't?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In other words, we had neighbors on both sides and across the street. I would wave at them every time, but they barely ever wave back. Or, you know, not like up here. We got to, we come home once a month.
Oh.
As quick as we enter Tennessee, around Martin, Tennessee, come to Kentucky, and come, people sitting on the porch, shelling peas, and just don't even know us. Waving and
uh-huh.
just like in a different world. We just finally said, why are we doing this?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Lexington had more, got more industry.
Uh-huh.
We had a what you call a metal plant, this Johnson Control. Ever heard of Johnson Control? It's a big outfit. Well, anyway, I start working for them. I made into management, and I worked for them 17 years.
And that, did you retire from them?
No, ma'am. I was plant manager for a place in Parson called Thermodynamics. I stayed with them about a year and a half, and I found out about their job in Henderson. They've been needing as a plant superintendent, RTT, International Telephone Telegraph. When I worked another 17 years from them, that's where I'm going.
That's where you retired. So you're happy you're here.
Yes,
you're happy
in this. Happy ending.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you just to reflect a little bit. Let me ask you about your father's becoming a citizen. Do you remember that day?
Mm-hmm. We went to Memphis.
You went to Memphis? Mm-hmm. And you went and your father?
The whole family went.
The whole family went.
The younger part, like Anna and Olga and Lisa, they made citizen automatic. Us older, like my brother, myself, and my daddy, my mother, we had to earn our citizenship, you know.
So that day, your father became a citizen, and did you become a citizen the same day?
Yes.
And Anton?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And your mother?
Mm-hmm. Wait a minute, I'm telling you wrong.
Your mother came later.
Mama didn't make no citizen at that time.
Uh-huh.
It was later.
Uh-huh.
I don't know, I forgot how much later, because she couldn't speak and...
Yeah.
No, she didn't, ma'am. I told you wrong, I think.
So, do you remember preparing to become a citizen?
We had the questionnaire, what they might ask us. They said might, it might not be, you know.
And you had books especially for that?
We could read already.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. So, was it a proud day for the family?
Sure it was, yeah.
Yeah, sure yeah, was. Yeah.
Yeah, I got the pictures made. There was many, many nations represented here in Memphis. One of them, federal judge, was in it.
Oh, uh-huh.
It was people from everywhere.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Made a long speech about the Pratt of Harris.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Access to a community. He studied each case, he said.
Uh-huh. So were you, like, called up separately?
Yes, separately.
And asked questions?
Uh-huh. Yes, ma'am.
Uh-huh.
Individually.
Yeah? Yeah. So, let's see. Then you said you wanted to go in the Army.
Yes, ma'am. I wanted bad. I wanted to join. I got drafted. But they claim I couldn't wear combat boots. I never did tell them what happened to me, nothing like that. And you're the only one I ever told to.
Really? You mean when your legs were frozen? You couldn't wear boots, huh?
That's what they said.
Uh-huh.
That's why I'm wearing, I'm doing that right this moment, but most of my life I wore cowboy boots.
You did?
Just to prove I could wear boots.
You could wear boots, uh-huh. So you really think you could have worn them?
I should have worn them.
Uh-huh. What made you...
The Vietnam War was raging at the time, you know, when I...
Is that why you wanted to? I mean, why did you want to?
I just wanted to go.
You wanted to?
I don't know why. No reason, no excuse. I just wanted to go. You know?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
An American soldier.
Well, you may be lucky you didn't go.
Yeah. Always... This was always, how you say it, void in my life that I couldn't went, you know. I would enjoy the military life, you know.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that comes from being in Germany at the time of...
Probably.
Yeah, uh-huh.
No, they determined that. They check, you know, they really check you thoroughly in those days. They probably still do. But I couldn't wear combat boots, no way.
Uh-huh. Huh. Okay, when you think about coming here and all that you went through before you got here, do you think that made a difference in the kind of person you are?
It made a whole lot of difference.
How so?
Well, when things happening, especially like this Louisiana deal, we've been there, roaming around, Eastern Europe with no place to go. Well, we had a place. We want to go back to the fatherland, but we didn't have no idea what's going to happen. We got attacked by our own Stuka bombers, you know, on several occasions. They didn't know who the wagon train was, you know.
Yeah.
Many got killed, see. They just come out of nowhere.
Uh-huh.
Make terrible sound. They had sirens on the plane. Do you ever watch a movie or a History Channel?
Yeah.
Those bombers, Stuka bombers, they had sirens on it to scare you.
Oh, uh-huh, uh-huh.
I remember that, at least two occasions.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so are you saying that you have empathy for people who are displaced?
They're hungry. And we always try to give any way possible. Same thing my sister. She tell you what they done with the Mexican guy, Czech guy, and all that.
Yeah.
We've been there, see?
Yeah, right.
No place, no home.
Yeah. Do you think there's any other way that you either approach things or think about things because of all you went through?
It got a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
Even when I made a high rank in management, I always felt for the poor, you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because I knew this guy was late a lot. Like, you would be late a lot, you know?
Uh-huh.
It was brought to my attention. I knew he didn't have a vehicle. He depended on somebody bringing him, you know?
Oh, I see.
I couldn't let him go because he's late, tardy, you know?
Yeah.
I did.
I see.
Just talk to him, see if get something worked out where he could get a vehicle or be more regular, ride with somebody different or something. Most occasion it worked out, you know.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's so easy for somebody, but if you could win him over, that guy might be one of my best workers.
Yes.
And I couldn't get many people to work over. Like weekends, we had a hot order. See, all our manufacturing goods goes to the automotive industry, like Ford, Chevrolet.
Uh-huh.
At that time, AMC, American Motor Corporation, probably before your time, you know. Well, anyway, that kind of people would always volunteer and do a good job.
Oh, uh-huh.
They were grateful, see. They had no problem. Always, my supervisor come to me, Nick, we got all we need, plus.
Uh-huh.
I said, well, did you get qualified people? You sure do.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
It helped. Always got a feeling to that. I never forget that, see.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of an American trait, too, that you root for the underdog. Mm-hmm. That's...
Me too.
Yeah, yeah. what are you proud of? What do you feel very satisfied having done?
Well, I got a good wife. I got beautiful grandchildren. My sisters and brothers are happily married. My Sienna. Glenn, everybody, and we feel like we accomplished something.
Yeah.
We made a mark in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
Coming from nothing, you know.
Yeah. How about your mother and father? Can you say about their attitudes?
Yes, their attitude was, I was going to say that they played great. They was always forgiving. Daddy was firm there. When I tried to be in management, I kept, you know, the old saying, firm. Don't let people run all over you. If you're not firm, they will, you know?
Right.
But you be fair and you be polite.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, you could fire somebody, still be fair and polite, you know?
Yeah.
And Daddy taught us all that. He taught us to work hard, to save. None of us ever go honky-tonking, drinking and smoking and all that. We you know,
mm-hmm.
We just try to...
Yeah.
Not to cheat nobody and go to church and just make good citizen, you know.
Yeah.
Set example.
Yeah. And how about your mother? What do you think you learned from her?
Kindness.
Yeah.
Daddy's tempered. But mama is the kind person. Same thing in my marriage. I'm very hard tempered, you know. But wife is so easy going, you know.
Yeah.
Now, my mama's a very kind person. She went through a lot, running all over the old country with us. Her legs is in horrible shape. And, she only got one eye.
I know, yeah.
And, bought us two there. Ma'am, here's a story.
Oh, good.
During the war days, we didn't have no forks, no knives, nothing. We had one dishpan. We built a community fire. If it was a night where the windows was all closed and we was in a big building, we built a fire. When I say community fire, maybe like 30 families, each got a corner. You know what I mean? With a blanket. That's how we lived. We built a fire and everybody cook on it, take the turn. Mama had this one aluminum dishpan that she gave us bath in, that she cooked in, that we eat out of it.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And she would told it, make sure we don't lose it. Hammer in one hand, the dishpan and little bundle in the other hand.
Wow.
Ain't it something?
Yeah. So your mother had the dishpan and you had the alarm clock,
yes,
and Anton had the peepot. Wow.
We went all over Germany, all over Eastern Germany, till we got to the West, you know, where there was no East or West, you know, it was one country, but...
Yeah, wow.
City to city. We lived in the woods many, many nights. We could see the city burning off in distance, you know.
Mm.
We had bark off a tree, we had leaves.
Wow. Mm. Yeah.
But after the war, it's one thing I say, the German government was good.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Did they help you get the sponsor, do you know?
No, my uncle did. Senator Kefauver, Kelly, they all worked together. Uh-huh. Yeah, the German people offered any kind of help, you know. The people in authority in that little town of ours, they was very... wanted to help us all they could, they didn't need to, we'd done everything. You know.
Yeah. How do you think about your German side and your American side? How do you think about yourself in those terms?
Yeah, there always be warm feelings toward the fatherland, no matter what they did, you know, everything is wrong. Was terrible things happened to the American Indians, remember we stole and killed them for the land and all that. During the Civil War, we in prison, let them starve to death, Union or Confederates. Well, anyway, there's always going to be warm feeling to the fatherland. The good they done afterwards. We had a bad regime, we had a bunch of hoodlums in power, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Cost us everything, a home, a land, everything. But we try to do away with that, you know. It's going to be a good feeling to the German people.
Mm-hmm.
They tried the best after the war.
Yeah. Do you think of yourself as German or do you think of yourself as American?
I'll always be a German.
Yeah.
But I'm American.
Yeah.
Even as you talk to me, I think in German.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. You mean in words?
In words and everything, yeah.
Really?
I still do that.
Do you dream in German?
I hadn't dreamt in years.
Oh.
No, I don't think so.
No.
I don't dream much.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, really, do you speak German? You speak with your family.
We speak with our family, yeah, that's all. We do not speak German in public. I don't think it sounds too good. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. We'd be in places and there'd be our neighbors from the south, speaking Spanish just loud as they could be. We don't do that.
No. Uh-huh.
We just kind of blend in. Our German, the whole nation is like that. Even when we met Germans out west, different places.
Yeah.
They always travel by themselves. You know, like a man and a woman.
Yeah.
That, and they don't speak the language in front of you. You know, they just try to blend in and everything. And other countries, especially the Latin countries, or the Japanese or the Koreans, they travel in groups, you know.
Yes.
The Germans, not like
no.
that. We're just trying to blend in and raise a little bit. Maybe we're ashamed of a past. I don't know.
But well, it's kind of impolite to speak where other people can't understand what you're saying.
They'd be in the next aisle, especially at Walmart.
Yeah.
You heard it, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with it, I guess. I mean,
Did your children learn German?
No, ma'am. We try not to. Yeah. Just be, it was very important for us to be all American.
American.
No German. My son don't know any German. My daughter don't know any kind of German.
Do you keep up any customs that are German?
No, ma'am.
None. No. Yeah.
We're all American.
Yeah. Okay. Well, now you're retired. What are you looking forward to now?
Well, I still work full time.
Oh, you do?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, that's right. That's why you're here today.
I work for Lowe's, Home Improvement Center. I mean, Garden Center. That's what I love. I deal with customers. If you come to me and you build a new home or want landscape, and I love nature. As you see, my sister, brother-in-law, flowers and trees and bushes. We all love nature, you know, every one of us.
Why
don't you see my daddy's place? All have the nature.
Good. So
I enjoy. I'm going to continue working. I'm 66. I'm going to be 67 in May. I'm going to continue working as long as I can.
Yeah.
I enjoy that.
Yeah.
It keeps me hopping, you know.
Yeah.
I work full time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's see. I'm wondering if we missed anything.
Ma'am, it's so much. You can't.
I know. I realize that.
So many things happen in Germany to us, and running from town to town, it just can't be all told, I guess.
Yeah.
On a wagon train going.
Yeah, I know this is the tip of the iceberg, but at least it's a flavor of all you've been through and.
The harsh winters, cause. I love history, because Napoleon got a taste of that when he got into Russia, didn't he? That's why he lost the winter, Russian winter. German army lost because of the Russian winter, see?
Uh-huh.
They weren't prepared. The Germans weren't.
Yeah.
Of course, the cruelty, inhuman treatment. Even if you lose the civilians, you're in trouble. They formed what you call the partisans, or the same thing in France. Germans treated their citizens ill. See, you can't do that. You gotta have the public on your side.
Right.
Same thing in Czechoslovakia. See,
I'm wondering, you know, having seen cruelty, and then you've lived out your life here. Is there any? Have you come to any kind of conclusions about human nature, about how people behave?
Fascinated by people.
Yeah.
It helped me a lot in manufacturing. I had one time over 1,000 working for me, see?
Wow.
Too many supervisors, you know. And I try to understand. Sometimes when you just talk to somebody, you convert them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm no preacher, nothing like that, just all business, you know?
But yeah. Uh-huh.
Tell them what they're doing wrong, you know. It helps a lot having all that kind of background.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, now, when you were in such dire circumstance where everybody had nothing, and did people behave in certain ways that you could define? In other words, when people are really pressed, is there a part of human nature that normally you don't see because people aren't so stressed to the limit? Is there anything about that that struck you?
No, ma'am. We just, I hope I answer you right. We didn't have nothing. But we just dreamed of a better life by working, you know? None of us ever been on welfare, unemployment, or nothing like that. You know, I hope I answer right.
Yeah.
We just dreamed of tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
That's Mom and Daddy told us that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Forget today, start tomorrow, you know.
And is that, would you say that's what sustained you when
ma'am.
Things
that's
were really bad?
The hard times and everything. Even on a wagon train going from Russia to Poland, from Poland back to Germany, you know, we had hopes of a better life, you know. Oh, well, mainly want to get away from the Russians, you know.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Because then we seen the villages and towns that our own people leveled. We came to Poland, we seen some of the towns that our people leveled. See, our opinion started.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah. Well, you were really caught.
We seen the cruelty our people did.
Yes.
See, in the German army, it's different than the American up here or any other. When you disobey up here, you be court-martialed, maybe sent to some time in jail or something. In Germany, the commander just puts his load out and shoots you right through the head, and that's it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, is there anything else you can think of relevant that you want to say? I mean, this has been a wonderful interview. I thank you so much. Oh, not at all. No, it's very, very interesting, and you really...
It should be told. It shouldn't be forgotten. I've been trying to do that for you. Of course, Glenn, he is all excited and all this, you know?
Yeah.
He sees the value in it. It's good material for a book or whatever.
It is. Well, you know, this is going to be, I collect all this information, and then it's available because to everyone. So somebody's going to latch on to this, I'm sure.
Future generations. Yeah. Not everybody lives that kind of life, see?
No, thankfully.
Gosh, at times we was hungry. My little sister, Anna, eat all our lunch.
Yeah. Where was that when that happened with the bread?
In Duderstadt. The war was still raging. Right in the final days. This was between April and May. See, we lost in May.
Oh. Uh-huh.
This was somewhere in between. Because just a few days later, we found white bed sheets out of every window and everything. Meant surrender, you know.
And when the surrender came, were you happy? I mean,
confused.
Yeah.
We didn't know what that. We didn't know what that means and that, and you know.
Yeah.
Confusion.
Because the Germans had lost, right?
Well, we was very bitter on that, you know. Every time you see Americans or English coming through, we was pretty bitter, you know.
Right, right.
But the time healed, you know. They was good. Like I said, they gave us chewing gum. Bar candies, and they jumped off, and they didn't want no monsters. See, by Hitler regime, they were, everybody was, how you say, awful, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But they were. I never remember a big, I was stood there watching American convoy coming through. I didn't have no shoes on, it was snow. Didn't have no shoes. And a big old black guy jumped off a tank, one of American tanks. Just hugged me.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Just went back on it. And left.
Wow.
I never forget that.
Wow. Well. Hmm. Okay. Well, we're at the end of the tape, and I think we're at a good stopping point.
I
thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
I'm speaking with Nicholas Wolford, and it's September 11th, 2005. Janet Levine signing off for the National Park Service.